Welcome to Fallscast, your go-to podcast for important community conversations in Cuyahoga Falls. Today, we have a special guest, Graham Ball, an advocate for immigrants and asylum seekers working with Americans Making Immigrants Safe, AMIS. Did I say that right, AMIS?
It's kind of a play on the French word for friends, so we pronounce it AMI.
AMI, I like that. So with the new immigration policies of 2025, many people are feeling uncertain about what's happening, how it impacts our community, and what we can do to support our immigrant neighbors. Graham has generously agreed to join us today to share insights from his work with AMIS and discuss that what we as a community can do to help. Before we begin, we want to make it clear that Graham is not a legal representative, and this conversation is not intended as legal advice. Instead, our goal is to provide a better understanding of the current immigration landscape and offer guidance on how we as a community can stay informed, take action, and support those in need. Graham, thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
So before we get into policies and impacts, could you tell us a little bit about yourself and what Americans Making Immigration Safe does and why it's so important?
For sure. Yeah. Thank you, Suzanne. So yes, my name's Graham. I'm a Cleveland native, born and raised. I've got 4 years of experience working with refugees, immigrants, and displaced people. I am now doing some part-time work for ME on outreach, and I am getting my master's degree remotely with the University of London in forced migration.
Oh, wow. Okay. University of London. That's nice.
Yes, they were kind to do a remote program for folks who don't want to necessarily move to the UK. So
yes, yeah. Is that, are you changing your mind now about that though?
No. No, my partner would like us to.
Same. Well, I understand. Okay, so we're here. So we'll talk about what's going on. So could you tell me a little bit about Americans Making Immigration Safe and what it does? How did it start? Just give us a little bit about it.
Yeah, absolutely. So ME has been around since 2019. It's formed kind of in the Northeast Ohio area. It really entirely focuses on Northeast Ohio, but it was founded in 2019 when there were some folks who came to Cleveland and needed some financial help to get set. These were asylum seekers. A group of concerned individuals came together and raised $11,000 in just a few days for these folks, and then realized that there's probably a much greater need in the community for things like this. And so since then, ME has been providing mostly direct financial resources to asylum seekers and other folks who don't receive benefits from the government, like refugees. So the stuff like paying rent for people, buying groceries, helping them to navigate our very complicated systems, things like that, helping them to, once they get their work permits, to find jobs, and just generally get set on their feet.
Wow, that's great. And you said it was founded in 2017? Is that what
Okay.
2019, I apologize.
Yeah.
Yes.
But so right. Now we're starting to move towards more responding to all the ICE raids that have been happening. Mm-hmm. And so trying to do Know Your Rights trainings and provide legal service and support for folks who are detained by ICE.
So speaking of that, with Trump being back in office, the immigration policies are changing fast. Can you break down any of the biggest shifts happening in 2025 or what you see that is the most alarming?
Yeah, for sure. So, you know, it's kind of complicated and changing fast, but the overall trend is very clear. It's all been laid out in Project 2025. They have a point by point system of how they're going to change the immigration systems, and they're working on it already, right? So one of the biggest things that's happened so far has been the passage of the Laken-Riley Act, which essentially removes due process for a lot of folks who are detained by ICE. If someone is accused of theft, so if they're accused of shoplifting without seeing a judge, without a conviction, they can be detained and deported by ICE simply based on that accusation, you know, without ever seeing any kind of due process. So that's something that's really concerning. Mm-hmm. That as well, you know, supported by many congressional Democrats, including three of our Ohio representatives, Marcy Kaptur, Amelia Sykes, and Griggs Landsman, which is disappointing to see that from Democratic representatives here. But that's, you know, that's kind of just like step one in this taking down of due process and dismantling kind of the rights that immigrants have. We're also going to be seeing the militarization of the border. We're already been seeing some National Guard deployments, but Trump is talking about deploying the actual army down there, increasing the capacity of immigration detention centers. Right now, a lot of immigrants are held in county jails. Geauga County Jail is where most folks are taken in Northeast Ohio. But I mean, so Trump has stated that he wants to deport all 11 million undocumented people who are in the United States, which is a pretty shocking goal, considering how many of these folks are members of our community, you know, are working in jobs that are essential. You know, they're the kids in your children's schools, their neighbors. So very, very concerning stuff.
Absolutely. And if we could maybe circle back a little bit about the thing that I found the most alarming and terrifying on what you just said, was that somebody who is an undocumented immigrant can just be accused of a crime and then they can just be deported out of the country. So you're saying that if, you know, you don't like your neighbor down the street, you could just simply accuse them of something, and then that potentially puts them basically on the plane back to wherever, you know, that they decide to put them at that time.
Yeah. That's exactly right. Even if they've been here for decades, a simple accusation is all that it takes to essentially remove due process.
That is very, very scary.
Very scary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Very unconstitutional.
Correct. I would think that, I mean, we do have a, I think we might have lost him just a little bit. There we go. You still there? You kind of
back.
Okay. Yes. All right. Okay. If you guys have any questions or like that, can you guys just start? You know, Jennifer, if you have any questions or you want to talk about it, feel free to kind of bring into this. So let's see, where were we? Blah, 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 blah. So can we talk a little bit about what rights undocumented immigrants do have? Do they have the same as like a U.S. citizen? Do they have the same rights as we do? Or what is it that they, what kind of rights do they have, I guess?
Yeah, for sure. So, you know, undocumented folks, when they're just in the community and on the street, have the same rights as U.S. citizens, right? So if you're thinking about engaging with law enforcement officials, they have those same rights. So the right to remain silent, you know, the Fifth Amendment is a big one. I think where it becomes different is that once they're detained and put into immigration court proceedings, the immigration justice system is different from the actual criminal justice system. Okay. So there is no right to an attorney in the immigration justice system. And as we're seeing now, due process is, of course, being revoked in certain situations. But in general, you know, when you're thinking about like if ICE is coming up to folks on the street, they have the same rights as a U.S. citizen would have in that situation. And it's, you know, recommended, of course, to not talk to ICE agents, you know, in those situations.
What about, would you recommend, and I know, again, you're not a lawyer and this is not a legal advice, but would you recommend anybody that may potentially be in a situation, or you have somebody that is ICE, or you don't even know if they're ICE or not, because my understanding is that they don't necessarily have to identify themselves as an ICE agent, and they just start asking you questions about if you have your papers, do you have any documentation? Is it better for them to just stay silent in that manner? Or is it better? What would you recommend? What have you seen the trends? Do they take you no matter what? And it really, there's nothing you could do. So stay quiet, or do you try to cooperate?
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, I think that if they're going to take you, they're going to take you. They've already decided. Mm-hmm. Right. And so, you know, in those situations, the best thing that you can do is stay silent and not give them a reason to take you if they hadn't have already decided to. Something that we saw with a recent ICE raid in Cleveland Heights on the restaurant Cilantro Taqueria on Coventry ICE raided this restaurant, allegedly looking for someone who had worked there a few years ago for a brief time who had a criminal record. And so they went in there, started asking questions. This person didn't work there anymore, but they kind of, I think, used that as a pretense to go. Several of the staff members got spooked by ICE's presence and six of them ran. So then they were detained because you can't run from ICE, just like you can't run from the cops. Mm-hmm. And so that gave ICE the pretense to detain these folks, take them to Geauga County Jail. So I feel like it's difficult for folks to, you know, it's one thing to know your rights, but to actually practice them is mm-hmm. pretty hard.
Absolutely.
You know, you're confronted with this frightening situation of, you know, armed federal agents at your home or at your place of work. It's tough to remember what you're supposed to do, even
absolutely.
if you know.
Absolutely. I like to think that I would know what I would do in that situation, but I don't. I mean, not until I get into it would I know. Now, I have heard, and I was wondering if you can confirm that there are two different types of warrants that the ICE can have. And the one of them would be signed by an ICE agent and that it was issued by ICE themselves, right? Or one that is signed and issued by a judge. And on that warrant, it would actually say which judicial, which judge would actually issue that warrant. So can you tell me a little bit about what the difference between the two warrants are? And do you know why it's important to know what the difference is?
For sure. So the first one you mentioned is called the administrative warrant. And so this is a warrant that's issued by ICE itself. That's basically just marching orders for its agents on where they want to go. The second, the judicial warrant, carries more legal weight. And so with an administrative warrant, it's really doesn't mean much legally. They can wave it in your face and use it to try to intimidate you. But it's the judicial warrant that actually allows them to enter private spaces, you know. And so, you know, ICE can knock on your door and hold up a warrant. And the recommended advice is that you just ask them to confirm, you know, is this an administrative warrant or a judicial warrant? And they could also lie to you, but, you know, that mm-hmm. if you're able to record them saying that, you know, that could help your case later on. Mm-hmm. Something that Ami has been doing is trying to educate both immigrants and business owners on their rights. So understanding mm-hmm. the differences between these things and what to do. So we've been canvassing local businesses up here in Cleveland Heights about, and after these raids, about what they should do if ICE shows up at their business. Mm-hmm. And so the very, you know, brief, you know, is explanation is, you know, you ask for those warrant comparisons, right? You establish yourself as the owner of the home or the owner of the restaurant, the manager, and you have designated spaces inside your restaurant that are private, right? So ICE can come into the dining area, for example, but if you have the kitchen marked private or the back office or the basement marked private, then ICE needs that judicial warrant in order to go into those spaces. And so that's pretty much the main thing, is like understanding that you can just go into the back room if ICE mm-hmm. shows up, and as long as your manager is looking out for you. And most of the folks that we talked to doing this business canvassing were very open to this because they don't want their employees to get detained. They don't want that disruption to their business. You know, because these folks are essential workers for them. So it's, you know, just having that, being armed with that knowledge can be very helpful if ICE does show up.
Absolutely. So, if you're a business owner or you're a manager of a store or a manager of a restaurant, and ICE walks into the door, the main thing is to ask or verify which type of warrant they have. And my understanding is that it will say some kind of court up on the top of the document, most likely, and you will see who signed it and make sure it's a judge and not some kind of officer or representative of ICE, if I'm
correct.
Right. So, okay.
Yeah. And then you say, you know, they ask, oh, can we go into your kitchen?
No.
You say, no, you can't.
Mm-hmm. Right? Okay.
So, yep. And at the same time, hopefully you or someone else is recording this interaction as well.
Okay. Well, let's talk about that a little bit. So as, you know, citizens who are concerned by this inhumane way that this administration has decided to treat undocumented immigrants or asylum seekers, what can we do as citizens? Like, how far can we go if we're sitting there and we're at a store, at a restaurant, or even if we're walking down the street and we see some kind of interaction and we know that this is, we're getting a sense of what's happening. What can we do? How can we slow them down? Because right now that's the goal, right? Is to at least slow them down and not make this so fast, make them start thinking about what they're doing and taking this a little bit more humanely than what they're doing right now.
I was just about to say, because I work in a public library, so a lot of what you said, you know, you're not allowed, they're not allowed to go back behind in staff areas. But the problem is, at least half the library is a public area, and they can go wherever they want. And we're kind of like, what can we do if it's, you know, somebody comes in to use the library and, you know, they're just a customer like anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a really tough one. You know, I think it's important, you know, in a situation like that to make a plan. So, you know, doing some research, consulting potentially. There's a lot of resources online about this with folks like the ACLU that give information of this type, but making a plan and communicating that to your staff for what to do in that situation. You know, you could invite undocumented folks into the staff areas potentially, right? I think that, yeah, just like I would check out the resources online, talk with the staff and make a plan for what to do in that scenario. Make sure that people know, and so there's less chance of panicking or, you know, folks running.
So I have a real quick question to circle back. Like when you were saying, with the cilantro raid that some of these spooked employees ran. Now, do ICE agents have the full arrest abilities that police officers have, or does it depend on what kind of warrant? Like, do we know if they had a judicial warrant or an administrative warrant going in there? I mean, does it matter in that respect, or just that they were acting suspicious and running, so they decided to detain them?
Yeah. So when you're engaging with ICE, like any kind of federal law enforcement agency, they do have that arrest power. And so if there is probable cause or suspicion, doing something like running, that does give them the ability to arrest folks, even if you're not undocumented. I think some of the six were not undocumented. I'm not 100% certain about what kind of warrant they had going into cilantro, although I did hear that they came into through the back door as well, which would imply to you they did have a judicial warrant.
Okay.
And that's again because of the criminal record of the employee who worked there years ago, right? But I don't think that would be your average situation.
So even if they're going in for one particular person who no longer worked there, they were able to detain other people because they were running, they were showing panic. So
right. That could be a shady way of doing it, knowing that somebody may or may not still work there. They might be able to get the judicial warrant due to that.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And so it's definitely, you know, and they, you know, they wear intimidating clothing. You know, I think there's definitely some measure of hoping that they can provoke that kind of response.
Sure.
Which is why it's so important to have that plan, to know your rights, that you remain silent, that you go to the private area. You know, so that they're less effective in their intimidation tactics.
So if somebody gets stopped with a car, like they're stopping, you're in your own car. Does somebody who's an undocumented immigrant, do they have the same right as, you know, not being able to be searched without a judicial warrant? If they stay silent, you know, they don't have to give their papers to ICE. Is it the same, everything that would be the same, like the rights that we would have if a police officer stopped us for a traffic violation or something like that, is those rights still applied to an ICE stop?
Yes, right. So, I mean, you definitely don't want to lie to an ICE agent who's pulled you over, right? So it's much better to remain silent, you know, say that you want to speak with your attorney, that sort of thing. I think that, you know, I'm not 100% certain about the car searches. I feel like a lot of times they're able to establish probable cause. ICE is able to operate freely within 100 miles of any U.S. border. And so that does include our area here in Northern Ohio, right? I mean, to kind of get back to your earlier question, Suzanne, about what to do if you encounter ice, I was 5 or 6 years ago, I was on a Greyhound bus, like driving through Buffalo, and had ice board the bus and started asking people for documents. Right. And I didn't know what to do at that time, you know, so I didn't do anything. I just stayed silent and minded my business. But so speaking purely for myself and not as legal advice or and I'm not a lawyer. But if I were to encounter a similar situation today, I would remind folks on the bus or on the street or in the restaurant or wherever I am of their rights. Right. So trying to speak probably in English and in Spanish, you know, saying like alerting folks, like saying ICE is here. And the way to say that in Spanish is la migra, like, which is the Spanish word for ice, essentially.
Okay.
And, you know, saying like shouting that, you know, like, don't talk to them, remain silent. No hablas, tienes derecho a no hablar. You have the right not to speak. And, you know, just basically making a scene. is what I would personally do in that situation, and to make it more difficult for ICE to kind of operate.
Correct. Yeah.
People.
That's what I was curious about. Would it be? I know that you're not a lawyer, so you don't know. So this is not a, you know, obviously, who knows what they would do, but would that be considered interfering with what they're trying to do? If you're just saying very loudly, you know, know your rights, you know, you have a right to, you know, to stay silent, you have a right to an attorney, that kind of stuff. Is that, it's just you're telling them, you know, is that interfering with what they're trying to do? I don't know.
I do not think that it is. I think that you have the First Amendment right in this public space to speak. If you are given an order by that ICE agent to stop talking or to back away, and you choose not to, then that could be considered obstruction of justice or failure to comply or something like that. But, you know, I mean, even in that situation, you know, you as a citizen getting arrested, you know, you've got to make that decision for yourself.
Right.
If it's worth in that scenario. But I would say just speaking, especially if you haven't been told not to, would not be considered, you know, against the law.
What about recording? Like, everybody is carrying around a camera now and pulling out your phone and start recording what's going on. Is that beneficial? Not only, maybe not necessarily for the people that it's happening to, but for organizations like yourself who are trying to watch the trends on how ICE is behaving with their interactions with anybody that is a potential undocumented immigrant.
Yeah, I would absolutely recommend taking pictures, taking videos. You know, we've already seen kind of around Cleveland and the surrounding suburbs, people will take photos of ICE agents conducting these raids or ICE agents in unmarked cars. You know, that kind of thing can be very helpful for immigration advocate immigrants to understand how ICE is moving. Mm-hmm. But then also, so like recording the sightings and sending those photos and those videos to immigration advocate groups, you can send them to us at ME. MECLEOHIO@gmail.com. You know, we can take those and use that information to alert the broader community. But you also don't want to be spreading, you know, panic. You know, so like we've had other people make reports that are not accurate, right? But when we get reports, we'll work to confirm them, kind of go from there. Photos definitely help with that.
Okay, good. Yeah. So if we are in a situation like that, try to do some video, some pictures without interfering, you know, or getting in their way, but that could help, you know, somebody in the future on how they're operating. That's good advice.
My big three, if you see an ICE raid or ICE agents in the community, is to inform. So that's that auditory explanation of your rights, to record, and then to alert. So to report that sighting to immigration advocacy group.
And real quick, what was that email address again? Ami Klee.
Yes, so that's AMISCLEOHIO@gmail.com.
And are there more of these organizations countrywide, or is this just a Northeast Ohio? If you said that.
No, this is just a Northeast Ohio thing. There are, of course, other immigration rights groups doing similar work across the country. But we're entirely focused on Northeast Ohio.
Okay.
Jennifer, do you have any questions? Since I know that you where you work. I didn't know if you wanted to bring in your experiences with or questions you may have.
I don't have any questions right now, but I do. I'll kind of reinforce what was said about having a plan. We are president released an enterprise-wide communication via email and on our intranet website. I work at the Cleveland Clinic, and listed out all the steps to take. If you saw immigration officials or ICE come into your area, you know, the first thing we do is we call our police department staff, because they have representatives who will interact with these agents. And then we contact our legal office. And then we also let our supervisor know. So, you know, knowing what to do, who to contact, and how to react accordingly in a legal manner, super helpful.
Yeah, definitely. It's very good to have a plan, and I'm glad that the clinic is doing that.
I think that that's something that's really important for all companies and all families to have a plan, to know what you would do. So if it does happen, you're not really acting on, that fight or flight, you know, somebody walking in, it can be very scary.
Yeah, you want to keep your emotions calm, right?
Yes. You want to keep your emotions calm and be able to know what you're doing.
You don't want to give anyone any reason to have a reasonable suspicion.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know necessarily if that was technically under Trump's plan or the whole Project 2025 plan, which he avows no knowledge of, that sanctuary cities were going to be, I don't want to say abolished would be the right word, but will not no longer be recognized. I don't know if that still holds any merit. I don't know if we have any in Ohio that still hold that status. So I don't know if Graham, you could clarify on any of that, you know, obviously you're going to be more knowledgeable than I am on this.
Yeah, for sure. So I think it's first important to understand what a sanctuary city is. And so basically all this status means is that your local police department, the city police department, will not cooperate with ICE. So, you know, stuff like turning over arrest records, you know, doing ICE's job for them in asking folks about their immigration status during routine stops. And there's a lot of good reasons for cities to want to not have their police force cooperate with ICE. A lot of police departments don't want to do this because it harms their relationship with their communities. It, you know, decreases trust in officers. And also a lot of folks claim they just don't have the capacity for it. So, the sanctuary city status is basically a resolution saying we won't cooperate with ICE, with our police department. And you're right, that is under attack. So it has been in the past under the previous Trump administration. They're continuing this policy where they threaten to withhold federal funding from cities who call themselves sanctuary cities. I think we're seeing bills at the state level as well attempting to outlaw this practice. So in Cleveland Heights, for example, in 2017, passed a resolution declaring itself a quote unquote welcoming city, which is maybe a bit of a semantics thing. And it didn't really do anything other than say we are welcoming. But, you know, to my knowledge, the directives from the mayor are to the police department to not cooperate with ICE. It's interesting also to see the rhetoric coming out of Mayor Bibb in Cleveland, who earlier in January commented that he would not oppose ICE confronting criminals, illegals is the term that he used repeatedly in that comment, which definitely take issue with, basically said, you know, if there are criminal illegals in Cleveland, we're not going to oppose ICE from detaining those. But after the ICE raids on cilantro and on many other Latino-owned businesses across Northeast Ohio, Bibb did come out and give a statement kind of condemning that action and stopped using the term illegals, which is of course good. But so I think city governments have to walk a fine line between what is declared publicly and privately to their police force, because even a mayoral directive saying don't cooperate with ICE could run you afoul of state and federal directives. I think that there's some subtlety there, probably.
What I was kind of curious to your point, what you were saying there, your local police department chooses not to automatically divulge that information to the federal government or to ICE or whatnot. That's different than, say, if the government comes in and says, hey, give us information on these people, then how they react to that might be a little different. You know, it's like if they go ahead and do it, yeah, you're not considered a sanctuary city, but you're not necessarily looking the other way to the government, but you're not automatically giving that information to the government. So that's where I think there could be a fine line that they could walk.
Yes. Yes, I agree. Right. And so it's, you know, it's there's like active participation in the program versus just not actively participating in the program. I mean, and once people are detained by law enforcement, their immigration status is set, you know, set up to ICE and these other federal agencies. At a traffic stop, that's not necessarily going to be the case, which is kind of the difference there. But, you know, so this past January, we have data for ICE arrests, and ICE was arresting about 1,000 people per day across the country in the last week of January, but then also issuing 750 detainers, which is basically what they call referrals of people who were arrested by other government agencies that ICE thinks that they want to deport. So those together, we've been seeing around 1,750 people a day who are being kind of funneled into this ICE detention system.
So not to be that guy, but were these processes still happening under the previous administration, under the Biden administration to a point, or is this just more being focused on because it's Trump and that's his rallying point?
He's a showman and he's making this a show.
Right. Well, that's a great question, right? Of course, so immigration was the number one issue for voters in this past election. So that's something that Trump ran on, and he definitely has to make that show. But last year, Biden deported 270,000 people, which is more than were deported over any year in the previous Trump administration, right? So he was doing more deportations than Trump was. But, you know, Trump has been upping those numbers and acting more aggressively. I think one, because a lot of the deportations before were more towards the southern border. And now, of course, we see ICE going into more northern communities. I think so Biden's ICE was arresting about 300 people a day compared to Trump's 1,000 people per day. Right. So we've seen about triple the arrests under Trump so far. But if Trump wants to deport all 11 million undocumented immigrants, I mean, it's incomprehensible. But if he actually was serious about that goal, he would need to quadruple those daily arrest numbers from where he's at right now. And I mean, they don't have the funding, they don't have the detention capacity. But I think that also speaks to some of the other things that the Trump administration has been flooding, like housing 30,000 migrants in Guantanamo Bay, for example. El Salvador has offered its prison systems up for both citizens and non-citizens, which is completely unprecedented.
Yeah, that was crazy.
Now, what would happen with some of the DACA recipients? I mean, I've heard some rumblings that he didn't want to split the families apart. So you're going to take these citizens that were born here, or not necessarily, you know, that's not our DACA, but you take some people that were born here and ship them away also. I mean, I know he's trying to get rid of birthright citizenship in that respect, but does that play into any of this, or?
I'm actually not 100% sure about that. I think it may come down to the discretion of the families. Like if you have, you know, two undocumented parents, family. Right. Yeah. Maybe there's other folks they can stay with, or they could go into the U.S. foster care system, which also wouldn't be great. But I've talked to folks myself who are at risk of deportation, who said that they would bring their kids with them, you know, even though their kids are citizens, you know, if they were able to do that. But yeah, DACA is a little bit different. DACA is also, this Dreamers Act is also under attack in Project 2025. They're trying to dismantle that. But that's kind of a separate fight.
Sorry to get off topic there a little bit.
No, that's not off topic. That's perfect.
I do have a question. Like students who are here on a scholarship, like I used to tutor students from Saudi Arabia who got, you know, full ride scholarships to study at Kent State. Like, how would this affect people who, you know, they just suddenly lose their scholarship, you know, even if they didn't do anything, if suddenly they're getting, you know, picked up and thrown back?
Yeah, that's a great question. So student visas have not been targeted to my understanding so far. But I think a common thing is that once folks complete their education, then they're not allowed to stay in the U.S. legally. So we have this thing where we educate folks on student visas and then don't actually allow them to stay and have our communities benefit from that education. We're also seeing a decrease in applications for student visas. A lot more people are going to go to Canada or Germany if they want to get good education. So I think I would worry less about students who have visas being deported and more about what happens after they complete their education or even before they decide to apply. But that is a good question. And I think a lot of folks are just really uncertain. There's a lot of fear right now. You have people who are not going to school. You have people who are staying home from work because they're afraid of ICE coming into their workplace or their school. And I think that's by design, right? That, instilling fear, they want people to quote unquote self-deport, right? To leave on their own volition.
Or it could even be people not seeking medical care for fear of being deported or being found out.
Yeah. And the one thing the clinic says, we do not ever inquire about immigration status of our patients. It's not a question that we ask. It's not anywhere in our system. So
very good.
It's good to know.
That's very good. Yeah. So can we talk a little bit about like the rhetoric that's being used right now, where they're using these buzzwords like criminal. If you're overstaying your visa or if you're undocumented, that they're considering them a criminal. I was wondering if you can maybe like debunk a little bit of that and the other rhetoric that's going around is that there's so many undocumented immigrants that are in here and they're causing a bunch of crime and they're murdering and killing and raping people. And what's the facts? What is the truth on that?
Yeah, for sure. Great question. So, I mean, one of the most ridiculous ways this is exemplified was in the Haitian population in Springfield, Ohio. And ludicrous levels of propaganda. But we're also seeing, things, the rhetoric about criminals is coming not just from the Republicans and from Trump, but also from Democrats. I was just reading an interview of a Democratic Senator, Ruben Gallego, who was parroting these same talking points. So I think it's important to remember that, number one, immigrants commit crimes at a lower rate than U.S. citizens. Right. I mean, immigrants are people. There's going to be people who commit crimes who are immigrants. Right. It doesn't mean that the entire population of folks who are coming here are and committing crimes. Of the people who were detained at the southern border last year, 1% had previous criminal convictions, either in the U.S. or abroad. Just 1%. So I think, like often happens, you have edge cases that are being used to define whole populations. And it's not unexpected, but certainly frustrating rhetoric that we have to fight back against.
Absolutely. Because my understanding is if you overstay your visa, it's not a criminal. Isn't it it's more of a what? Not a criminal.
Civil? Isn't it a civil violation?
Yeah,
for sure. And those are different, not considered the same,
right.
by those. Something to think about, if you're thinking about asylum seekers, mm-hmm. is asylum seekers have 1 year in which to apply for asylum. And so, as long as people who are trying to apply for asylum do so within that first year, they won't have any dings for even the crossing of the border, which is considered an illegal crossing. Mm-hmm. But under international law, you are allowed to seek asylum if you have a reasonable fear of persecution based on your identity. And so it's really frustrating. And up in Cleveland, we have the only immigration court in the state. And so all the immigration cases from around Ohio have to come up to Cleveland to be heard.
Wow, that's crazy.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, and so the asylum court has an 80% rejection rate for folks who are seeking asylum. Wow. So you have the burden of proof is very high. And one of the things that Trump has already done is raise that burden of proof even higher. You have to basically be able to provide documentation that your life was threatened. Documentation that you are experiencing this persecution. And so if you don't have text messages, from somebody saying, I'm coming to get you, then you're going to have a very difficult time proving what's been going on. We've been working with a clinic at Case Western, that medical school, which does like forensic exams for asylum seekers that creates documents for them to be able to use at their asylum hearing. So if they have physical, like evidence of physical trauma on their bodies, that, you know, showing a scar in court doesn't count. But if you have a doctor saying this was torture, that can really help. We also see much better results when people have legal representation. So something that me and other works do is try to make sure that everyone who's going into asylum court has a lawyer to do so. Catholic Charities does a lot of really good work with this, providing asylum representation. But I encourage folks to look up this Columbus Dispatch article from 2022 about Judge Owens, which describes in pretty terrible detail some of the like misogynistic and racist things these immigration judges will say from the bench. It's pretty brutal. A lot of Trump appointees. It's tough. 80% rejection rate. And people who have entirely legitimate claims. And that's, you know, some of the things is like helping people to not be detained by ICE is upholding international law, right? That we are required by international law to offer these folks asylum. And if our courts are not giving them a fair chance at seeking that asylum, then, you know, we're in resisting ICE raids and doing our best to inform people of their rights, trying to uphold that higher international law.
To that point, how long does it normally take? So say somebody comes here seeking asylum, how long does it take before they even get their case heard? And would they fall outside of that quote unquote time limit, you know, before they're deported, you know, or can they be deported during that time period?
So that's a great question. First is that when asylum seekers come here, they are not eligible for any benefits. You know, there was some rhetoric about Senator Sherrod Brown, like voting to give health care to asylum seekers or whatever. And that's just false. They don't get SNAP or any kind of like welfare benefits whatsoever. And they're not allowed to work until 6 months after they filed their application for asylum. So there's this six-month period where if you don't have family or community supporting you, you have no way to legally live, right?
Wow.
Which is crazy and doesn't make any sense. So once you actually file that, it can take years to work through the process. The courts are pretty backed up. I was just talking with a lawyer from Catholic Charities, who is assuring me that folks who are currently in the asylum process should be protected from deportation, assuming that ICE and the Trump administration continue to follow the existing norms and laws, which is maybe a big assumption. So the folks who are in, once you file that, you are theoretically safe until your case works its way through the court. And even if you are denied asylum, you can still appeal that denial. Even though 80% are rejected, it can give people a few years reprieve from whatever terrible situation they're running away from.
Okay.
So we talked a little bit about what we could do as citizens if ICE does show up in a location that you're at. And I would like to just kind of reiterate what I have been hearing people say. I mean, I'm kind of thinking like if ICE comes and knocks on your door, they may not identify themselves as ICE. They may be wearing a jacket that says police on it, even though they are not your local police. They may lie to you and tell you what they're doing when they start asking questions. So the biggest advice that I have heard was that you just don't open up the door to anybody that comes up to your door. Because Mike and I were listening to, we were telling you that the AOC had a really great webinar with legal immigration attorneys talking about what your rights are, know what your rights are. And that was kind of the biggest takeaway that I didn't even think. Like, so if you're talking to somebody and it feels rude that you're talking to somebody over the door and you're like, what are you doing here? What are you looking for? And it feels rude and we want to like open up our door, especially us, you know, Ohioans that are a little bit nicer, you know, like, oh, we open up the door for you, that could mean or interpret that you're welcoming them in. So basically you need to treat ICE like vampires, right? You don't invite them in. You don't give them any reason to like, you know, follow you around, you know, you don't make any sudden movements and you don't have to open up the door unless they have that warrant that's signed by the judge. So would you agree with that?
No, I would absolutely agree. That's very good advice for anyone who has any concern about their immigration status, but also just for your average citizen. Mm-hmm. There are reports that ICE will go into communities and will ask questions about their neighbors, right? You know, potentially, as you say, in masquerading as police officers. You know, so definitely important just to not engage with that. Don't give them any information, anything that they can go off of. You know, you're certainly not required to. You know, don't lie to them, but just don't answer their questions. You know, that's the beauty of the Fifth Amendment is that, you know, we just don't have to talk to law enforcement agents if we don't want to.
And another takeaway that I had from the webinar was that even if you're complying with them, because you don't want to fight, you don't want to resist, because then you can get into trouble. But if they're asking you to hand over paperwork, or if they're asking you certain questions, you can continue to say, I'm not consenting to this. I'm not consenting to that, even while you're actually handing over the documentation, because then you have it on record that this was forced upon you, that you're not consenting to this search. You're not consenting to hand over these documents. You're not consenting to answering these questions. But we also know that sometimes you are in a situation where you have to, because they are going to put a lot of pressure on you and use intimidation tactics. And, you know, you may just open up the door a little bit, just look at the warrant that they have, and then and they go and they storm. And now you have to, but you can still maintain your rights. You can still have your rights. And you just keep saying that over and over again, that I'm not consenting to this. So that was one of the things that I kind of got out of that, even for us as citizens, if we're ever, you know, hopefully we will never have to, you know, deal with this. But if we do, it's the same. They have the same rights as we do as citizens. And that's the biggest takeaway that I got from that.
Yeah. And even if that doesn't help you in the moment, that can help you when it's litigated down the line, right? Okay. So, you know, hopefully if ICE is violating your rights, you know, you could have the case thrown out if you're fortunate enough to have representation.
Yes. Yes.
I have a real quick question. I don't want to say as far as profiling is concerned or whatnot, but it seems like a lot of it happens to be on the Latinx community or Middle Eastern, you know, people of brown descent, shall we say, or even, you know, Indian, Pakistani. Is there more of a disparity towards people of color versus like Eastern European or people that look more quote unquote white or Caucasian, you know? Is there any kind of evidence that it is more being profiled against people that are obviously not Caucasian?
Yeah, absolutely, right? So, I mean, Trump just said last month, he's like, you know, you can tell if they're an illegal just by looking at them, you know? I mean, like, so that's definitely something we're seeing. Looking at, like, the law enforcement cooperation with ICE, there's been studies shown that Latino drivers, when local law enforcement is cooperating with ICE, Latino drivers are 10 times more likely to be pulled over than folks of other races. And just looking at the ICE raids that have happened in Cleveland, right? They're targeting Hispanic-owned businesses. They're targeting Mexican restaurants, Guatemalan restaurants, right?
So they're not going into Little Italy or Slavic Village or, you know, places like that.
No, and that's not to say, you know, we've had a lot of Ukrainian folks coming over on temporary protective status in the past few years. And the Ukrainian community is under threat from Project 2025, as one of the things is removing TPS status from the Ukrainians who've been here for a few years. You know, so no one is necessarily safe, right? But I think that you think about profiling, and it's definitely going to be impacting communities of color more than white and European undocumented.
So how can we help? What can we do?
For sure. Yeah. So there's a lot to be done, right? Of course, we've heard about what to do if you encounter ICE as you're going about your day. There's a lot of different organizations that are doing this work and serving undocumented communities. It's a kind of a fractured landscape. A lot of communities are served by relating to their identity. So you have like Hispanic people are being served by Hispanic churches, or Congolese folks are being served by the Congolese community. But there are also coalitions. So there's the Interfaith Group Against Hate, We Are Many, We Are One, are two coalitions that are, you know, doing this work along with nonprofits like AMI, Ohio Immigrant Alliance, Catholic Charities, OLA is in Painesville, Nueva Luz, is serving folks on the near west side of Cleveland. El Centro is in Lorraine. But so, you know, getting involved in any of those organizations is a great way to help. With AMI specifically, right now we're fundraising for that legal support I was mentioning. We're trying to raise bail money and money for attorneys So that everyone who is detained by ICE in Northeast Ohio has that access to an attorney that they are not guaranteed by the country. And the bail funds is really tough, like, because normally when you have a bond set in a criminal case, you only have to pay 10% of that to get out of jail. And that's not the case for immigration court. You have to pay the full amount in immigration court. So that's, we've seen that be between $5,000 and $15,000 per person.
Wow.
Did not know which that. It's crazy, right? But so that is money that we get back as that person, you know, continues to engage with the system. But it takes years potentially to get that money returned to us. So that's a big thing right now, is donations are super helpful. But we also have volunteer opportunities to, you know, do stuff doing Know Your Rights canvassing. So that's what I was talking about before, and going to different businesses and informing the, giving them materials and informing them of their rights if ICE should knock on their door. And you know, you can do this in a group, or you could just look up the information online and go visit your local businesses and help them know what's happening. You can get on ME's email list. We try to keep people relatively informed about different updates and what's happening. You can find all of that on our website, which is meohio.org, AMISOHIO.org. And at that website, you can find out more information about volunteering and donating and all that stuff. So there's a lot that we can do to keep our communities safe. You know, it's up to us to fight for the world that we want to live in, where no human being is illegal. I really appreciate you guys, you know, having me on to talk about this important topic and engaging your community about it.
I think it's been very informative, and I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to us and hopefully help some of our neighbors in Cuyahoga Falls. And so before we wrap up, what's your final message to us?
Yeah, I think I was thinking about Timothy Snyder, you know, has written some books on authoritarianism and talks a lot about how we can't abdicate our power preemptively. You know, I think that there's a lot of fear going around about the Trump administration and what it means. But I really feel like the best thing to do is to be active in your community, to get to know your neighbors, to take care of your neighbors, make sure they're safe, you know, and not, you know, allowing authoritarianism to wash over us by inaction and pre-censoring yourself. So I would say to don't be afraid, use your power and your privilege and your position to resist in whatever way you can.
I love that. And it does feel very overwhelming with everything that's happening in the federal government, with Trump just basically trying to blow our whole entire systems up. But, you know, we can make a difference here locally. You know, we may not be able to make much of a difference with what Trump is doing and his administration is doing right now, but we can make a difference here locally. You can make a difference with knowing, like you said, get to know your neighbors, get to know who they are, and just get involved, you know. So thank you so much again for, you know, meeting with us and talking about this really important topic, and something that is very important in my heart right now, and I think in a lot of you know, Cuyahoga Falls residents' hearts right now. So I really do appreciate it. If you could tell us one more time a little bit about AMI and where we can get more information about that organization, I would appreciate that.
For sure. Yeah. So Americans Making Immigrants Safe, Northeast Ohio organization, providing direct financial support to folks who are seeking asylum, and, you know, providing legal support to everyone detained in Northeast Ohio. So you can Google AMIS Ohio or go to meohio.org to find out more information. Definitely shoot us an email. Our email is on the website. And, you know, if you have any questions, I'd love to follow up. So
great.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Yes. And if anybody who is listening has questions or would like to get any more information, we can definitely, you can definitely send us an email as well, and we can provide you that information and the website if you are having trouble finding it at falsefreepress@gmail.com. So thank you very much again for joining us.
Thanks, Graham. Nice appreciate to meet you. You. Really appreciate
thank
the info.
You, thank you.
Thank you all.
FalseCast is a production of the Falls Free Press in Cuyahoga Falls, Ohio. Please check out the Falls Free Press at fallsfreepress.com or on social media at facebook.com/fallsfreepress. We thank you for listening to this episode, which was recorded and edited by Bart Sullivan. Please subscribe to our podcast and tell your Call to Falls friends and family so they can listen as well.